Welcome, students. So now we are going to a chapter on macroeconomics. Till now, whatever you have studied was all based on microeconomics. Now we move to chapter 14, where we'll give you a glimpse of macroeconomics and business. The objectives of this chapter are, you'll understand what's national income, the nature, concept, and measurement of national income. Types, causes, and measurement of inflation, very important term called Phillips curve, stagflation, trade cycles, because trade cycles have an impact on business, and finally, input-output analysis. So national income, inflation, trade cycle, input-output analysis is what the chapter holds for us. Let's go ahead. We start first with making you understand what micro-level managerial decisions are made up of. They are generally considered as short-run perspective, because whenever company is making decisions for its internal environment, it is micro-level decision-making, correct? And there are not much fundamental changes in the microeconomic environment, and therefore it becomes very easy for the firm to make its decisions within the organization. But when it comes to the environment outside the firm, that is the macroeconomic environment, it has a very broader perspective, okay? There are a lot of ups and downs, and therefore, we apply what is called as general equilibrium theory. The students of economics who have studied about micro and macro in the beginning when we discussed, micro deals with individual, macro deals with aggregate. In micro, we study in parts, but in macro, we are going to study about the entire thing together. So it's a general equilibrium concept that is applied in macroeconomics. Macroeconomics, what is it about? This slide gives you an idea that macro studies the interrelationship or interaction between macroeconomic variables. Now, what are macroeconomic variables? They are nothing but the factors or forces. Okay, that determine the level of growth of national output, employment, general price level, balance of payment of an economy. So those students who are learning economics for the first time, remember students, macroeconomic variables are nothing, but they are those forces or those factors which are overall changing in the economy. We have picked up some macroeconomic variables which you see in this slide, like general price level, inflation, GDP of the country, national output, the employment level of the country. And of course, because we are today having foreign trade, we have a very important macro variable called balance of payment. That means how much the country is importing, how much is it exporting, investments abroad, investments within India, and all this is reflected in balance of payment. Okay? Now, let's go ahead to understand the nature and concept of macroeconomics. Macroeconomics has both positive and policy orientation. Abhi jab hum bolte positive and policy orientation is normative. We say macroeconomics is both a positive and a normative science. A positive science will only have theoretical orientation. You study a theory and that's positive. But when you start using a description of that theory, why is it like this, or why this policy has worked like this, policy making, then that becomes a normative science. Usually, the economic thinkers say that whenever an attempt is made to find solution to any practical problem, or wherever you find there is a policy making team, there's a policy which is being made, framed, implemented, then that's a normative science. So macroeconomics has both positive and normative science approach. And as we already know, in business, decision making has to be normative, and therefore we cannot ignore the role of macroeconomics influencing the decision making at organizational level, okay? We start with the very first component of national income, which is national income. Now, whatever business enterprises are set up, organizations are set up, ultimately whatever they produce is getting accountable in national income. What is this national income? We have mentioned here two famous economists, Simon Kuznet, J.M. Keynes, and how they have defined national income, you can see over here. साइमन कुजनेट सेज इट्स द नेट आउटपुट. नेट वर्ड यूज किया क्योंकि हम माइनस करते हैं डेप्रिसिएशन, तो हम कभी भी बोलते हैं नेट आउटपुट ऑफ गुड्स एंड सर्विसेज विच आर फ्लोइंग ड्यूरिंग द ईयर. फ्लोइंग, तो इससे हमें समझ में आता है नेशनल इनकम इज अ फ्लो कॉन्सेप्ट. ओके, सो फ्रॉम द कंट्रीज एंटायर प्रोडक्टिव सिस्टम, दैट मीन्स द प्रोडक्शन टू द अल्टीमेट कंज्यूमर. Whatever is the flow of goods and services, when we start calculating it in monetary terms, we determine national income. J.M. Keynes have simplified it. He says, national income is the money value of all goods and services produced in the country during a year. Matlab, ek saal mein, all the goods and services that are produced, jab hum usko monetary calculate karte hain, money terms mein, we get the national income. So remember the definitions very well. All national income calculation is based on some important concepts. This slide introduces you to some of the important concepts which you can just have a look. GDP, GNP, NDP, NNP, PI, PCI and PDI. The students who are learning for the first time, gross domestic product. Gross domestic product comes from the total output coming from the three sectors. See, on the basis of production and occupation, we divide the economy into three categories. The agricultural sector, industrial sector, service sector. So whatever is the output from the three sectors, that gets accountable in our gross domestic product. In gross domestic product, we are only counting the value of only those goods and services which are produced within the geographical boundaries of a nation. So within India, whatever is contributed by the Indian or foreign companies will be reflected in our GDP. But students, GNP, N stands for national. So GNP is a wider concept. GNP will take into account the net income which is coming from abroad. So if we have Indians who are working abroad, okay, whatever their contributions, whatever they are earning, that will be reflected in our GNP. GNP gives us an idea of how much Indians or any country's nationals are working abroad. So GNP is a very wider term. Now, compared to GDP and GNP, there's always a debate which is a better measure of national income or which is a better index of economic performance of a country. Like if you appear for an exam, you get your mark sheet. So your mark sheet is an index of your academic performance. Similarly, the economic performance of a nation can be seen from its GDP. Well, GDP is considered as a stronger economic performance measure than GNP because GDP tells you the productive capacity of your nation. Now, when we talk about depreciation, because the country is producing not just consumer goods, but also machinery, capital goods, infrastructure, roads, railways, all these, you know, you talk about social and economic infrastructure. You talk about health, education, electricity, energy, transport. So there is going to be depreciation. So when we minus the depreciation, we derive net. So we always say, it's very simple to remember, GDP minus depreciation, GDP minus depreciation will give you NDP, net domestic product. GNP minus depreciation will give you net national product. Then you have personal income, you have per capita income. Students, personal income. Personal income is the income which a person earns from all the sources. Per capita income. Per capita income is a purely quantitative term where you will divide the country's national income with its population. So when the national income is divided with the population, we get per capita income of a nation. When we want to know about the the success and economic performance of a country, we divide its population with the GDP. Always, if the GDP is higher, the national income is more, the growth of national income is faster than the growth of population, it will be reflected in higher per capita income. Like Norway, Norway stands at the first position when it comes to per capita income. But as we are in a country where we have to pay tax on income, which is a direct tax, so minus the taxes, minus all the other necessary deductions, we derive personal disposable income. Personal disposable income is the income which is left after paying your taxes and compulsory contributions. It is that income which you are free to spend. So with that, we are cleared with, I have finished with all the national income concepts which are of relevance to understand the performance of an economy. How is this national income calculated? On a very broad level, there are three methods of calculating national income, which I have put in a three-column chart. The product method, the income method, and the expenditure method. The national income of a country is always calculated using any of these methods. The first method is product method. Now, the product method will always be used when we are only calculating the final goods and services. Students, it's important to remember that when we say final goods and services, we are going to exclude all the raw material, intermediary goods, matlab jo semi-finished products hote. Okay, like sugar, steel, rubber, coal. So intermediary goods will be excluded. All the money which is sent by Indian citizens who are working abroad should be added. So we say gross national income is money value of total goods and services plus income from abroad. Theek hai? Income method mein what we do is, we calculated all the income that is earned in the process of production. So all those who are employed, plus all those who are, you can say that who are, the factors of production, land, labor, capital, enterprise. So whatever rewards they are earning, that rewards are added. So see, income earned through wages, rent, interest, profits have to be added together. But any income which is in the form of like pensions, okay, transfer payment, jisko bolte, unemployment benefits, any social security, that should be minused. So income which is only earned from a productive source, okay, so no pensions will be added as a source of income under income method. So this is gross national income using income method will be rent plus wages plus interest plus profit plus income from abroad. Income from abroad will always be added in both product method and income method. Finally, you have the third method, which is called as the expenditure method. In expenditure method, all the expenses, see today, because you are, whenever you spend money, you get a bill. Bill is a reflection of your expenditure incurred, right? So we say total expenditure incurred in a particular year is to be added. So the money that is spent by the population can be into public consumption expenditure. It can be net domestic investment. So entrepreneurs, business firms, whatever they are spending, like they are investing, will be reflected in the expenditure method under net domestic investment. Government expenditure on goods and services and net foreign investment. So FDI, which is coming in India, can be reflected in the expenditure method. So usually gross national income broadly is clubbed into individual expenditure plus government expenditure. So these are the three main methods in which the national income gets accountable. After understanding national income, we look at the second macroeconomic variable, which is of a very high importance from business context, and that is inflation. Inflation is always considered as a motivator, as a positive variable for business enterprises to invest. What is inflation? It is a sustained upward trend in the general level of prices. remember general level of prices. So if the price of any one or two goods, like see, if property rates are rising, you don't immediately say inflation. Inflation will be used as a term, it's a macro term, when there is an overall increase in the prices. So this is a long-term variable. So if you look at Jay Ackley's definition of inflation, he says it's a persistent and appreciable rise, persistent, continuous rise in the general level of prices. So you'll have to take a date of at least 5 to 10 years for and look at the movement of the prices. And if you draw the graph and you see that the graph is going upwards, you declare it as an inflation. Okay? But inflation has various types. Here we are introducing you and giving you a very small chart of the different types of inflation and how the prices of the products or services or general price level word is a term we use in macro is observed. On the basis of the inflation, there are, as you see, four types of inflation: creeping, walking, running, and galloping. The names are very familiar. It is the speed, right? So in creeping inflation, the prices are only going to rise between 1 to 3% per annum. And this inflation is never considered as harmful for economy or economic activities. Matlab ye 1 to 3% ka jo creeping inflation hai, we assume that it is always going to be there. Walking inflation, the speed goes up. See, look at the percentage price, 3 to 5%. So when inflation is rising from 3 to 5% per annum, then we say the impact on economic activities is going to be little adverse. So here the inflation is going to be little adverse. Okay. Coming to running inflation. When you talk about running inflation, the inflation goes up to 10% per annum. So when the inflation is increasing from 10% per annum, it's not favorable. There's a fall in the standard of living. So inflation, which is hiking at 10% per annum, is not considered favorable because here the standard of living of the people. So this is where the government has to be cautious and inflation control measures need to be introduced. If this goes uncontrolled, it may lead to galloping inflation. You found this happening in Sri Lanka. Prices start rising more than 10% per annum and it's a situation of out of control hyperinflation. So these were the types of inflation. What are the causes? There are innumerable causes and we have just put down these causes. The factors which are responsible for increase of inflation. First cause is bahut sara paisa hai, money income. Jab market mein bahut paisa aata hai to wo bhi ek cause hai inflation ka. Now, what is the reason for money income going up? Why is there more money in the economy? The first is said to be monetary and credit policy of the government. When we say monetary and credit policy of the government, what happens in this case? In monetary and credit policy of the government like RBI, you know the RBI keeps changing the CRR rate. So when the government wants more funds in the market, they want people to have easy credit, you know, they relax their credit policy. So when the credit policies are relaxed, when the government brings down the rate of interest and starts giving easier loans, there is more money in the hands of the people, which may be a cause of inflation. Increase in the velocity of money. Velocity of money is the speed at which the money is circulating. So agar logon ka spending bahut fast hai, which is happening now because of online. Today people are online, it's so is fast and easy that people online place an order and it's so fast that people are tend to spending more than what was expected. So velocity of money is very fast. Definitely prices will go up. The next is credit policy of commercial banks. Here we are talking about the lending rates. Today, commercial banks are totally controlled by monetary policy. If it is relaxed, credit policy of commercial banks automatically gets expanded. Easier loans. You will find this happening during festivals. So when there is a festive offer, commercial banks start giving very easy loan offers. So that also brings more money in the hands of people. And therefore, during festive season, the prices tend to go up. Deficit financing. Deficit financing is printing of more currency to be flowed into the market so that there are more investments happening. So whenever there is a slowdown observed in the economic growth, the government starts relaxing its policies, and deficit financing is used. Actually, deficit financing is done when the government's expenditure is more than its revenue. So the government, when it has various projects, I think deficit financing was one of the reasons for the Sri Lankan crisis. Investing in projects which were not for the economic growth. With some deficit financing, it will bring inflation. Increase in unproductive expenditure. I think we talked about Sri Lanka recently. An import of foreign capital. When a lot of foreign companies start flowing their funds into Indian market, there's more money coming into circulation. So all these are the factors which means more money circulating in the economy, which may give rise to prices. Financial disorder, it's a very negative variable. So government's budget is going out of order. They are running short of funds. Reserve Bank of India is having a credit crunch. That may be a problem. Favorable balance of payment is when students, we have more foreign exchange. So when our exporting companies earn high foreign exchange, then definitely they start investing, and that may be one of the cause of rising inflation. And we have import price. Import prices, when they rise, definitely it's a inflation. Like look at the prices of petrol and diesel. The government removes the subsidy, and the moment they have left it open to the market structure, the import price, when it goes up, the fuel prices definitely goes up. And with rise in fuel prices, all the connected sectors start facing the crunch of that inflation. And that's how the general price level starts picking up. The next causes of inflation, if not more money, is a fall in production. Yahan par we are talking about supply side of the market. Earlier was the demand side of the market, because more money, so more investment, more spending, demand side. Here we are looking at the supply side of the market. What are the factors due to which the supply or the production is less? And that may also give rise to inflation. Natural factors, always observed in agricultural sector. If there's a bad monsoon and there's a crop failure, then though there is a demand, the supply is not coming up to the mark, pulling up the prices. Isko hum bol sakte demand pull inflation. Increase in population, black marketing and hoarding. I don't want to explain all this because it's a self-explanatory. Shortage of raw material definitely was found during pandemic situation, especially the microchips which were running. There was high shortage of raw material. So if the company has to complete its production, they have to buy it at a higher price, which they are not ready. So whenever raw material expenses go up, the companies will withhold the production, bringing down the supply. And this demand supply gap pulls up the prices. Strikes. Trade and fiscal policy of the government. Here we are talking about the taxation policy of the government. So if the government starts imposing a very high taxes, that may also be a disincentive for the production class to withhold the production, bringing down the market supply. And any type of structural inadequacies. Structural inadequacies are the policy changes. Okay. Structural inadequacies are like, for example, if we are going for digitalization, it's a structural change in our system. And any structural change, like for example, moving from petrol and diesel driven to electric cars. Now, this is going to bring a structural change in the transport segment, and that may also somewhere lead to the withhold of production of fuel-based cars or vehicles. Now, once we understand the causes of inflation, it's important to understand how the government checks this inflation. Most of you keep reading the newspaper and you try to look for what various steps the RBI is taking up from time to time to control inflation. Well, there are two most popular, or we can say the two important measures to check inflation, and they are monetary measures and fiscal measures. When we talk about monetary measures, some of the monetary measures which we have found very strongly useful and effective is strict note issue policy. Under this, the government will not ever cross the printing of currency beyond the fixed, the minimum limit. Okay, it is called as a minimum reserve system of RBI. You can Google search it, and you'll find that minimum reserve policy of note printing of currency. Issue of new currency. So when the government has to issue a new currency, like demonetization was also one way to check inflation. Credit money control. So credit money control is where the government decides how much of the loans the bank is going to give in the market. So the bank will increase its bank rate. So when the Reserve Bank increases the bank rate, the rate at which the commercial banks borrow will be high. The rate at which commercial bank lends in the market will go up. It will bring down. It is called credit squeeze policy. Strict credit policy. Okay. Open market operations are where the government decides to sell its securities. So when the government starts buying its securities, okay, or it starts selling its securities, more money is going from the market, the money is going back to the government. So it is like pulling back the money. So it starts selling its securities in the market. And you have high reserve requirements. High reserve requirements is like credit rationing. How much would be the money that would be given as loan would be strictly rationed. That means beyond that limit, the loan amount will not be sanctioned. So these are some of the ways in which RBI can control the money supply in the market. Either they have to relax the credit or they have to make the credit policy more strict. You will find that all these are money control measures because there is inflation. So they will never have easy credit policy, but more of credit squeeze policy. We call it as strict credit policies. On the other hand, no monetary policy is successful unless or until there is a complementary fiscal policy also operating. Fiscal policy is the taxation, the government expenditure, and government going for a balanced budget. Balanced budget is where the government's expenditure and its revenue should be equal. Increase in savings. So government will come up with various schemes where it will encourage people to save more and spend less. Increase in public debt. So if the government's public debt goes up, then definitely the government will not be in a position to spend more. So expenditure will come down and that will bring down inflation. Control on investment, income and prices policy, and overvaluation of currency. Now, overvaluation of currency, what happens in this case? If our currency gets overvalued, then definitely we will not be in a position to have more currency in the market, and that would, people will prefer to retain the currency, which would be bringing down the spending and checking inflation. Now, there is a situation, students, where even though there is inflation, but the output starts falling and unemployment starts rising. This is considered as one of the worst outcome of inflation, where inflation restricts the production plans and it creates unemployment in the economy. So whenever there is unemployment and inflation simultaneously taking place, you declare it as a situation of stagflation. So in stagflation, the prices will start rising. It was observed in 1970s when the price of oil was very high and the unemployment rate was also very high. So always remember, you have to look at the inflation rate and the unemployment rate. And if both are very high, then you declare it as a situation of stagflation. From stagflation, there's a connected term which is used whenever we talk about inflation, and that is Phillips curve. Phillips curve is said to be developed, an economic concept developed by A.W. Phillips. And he says that inflation and unemployment have a stable and inverse relation. He never talked about stagflation. He said stagflation situation will only happen when the relation between the two will be high. But he said what I have observed is that whenever there is very high level of inflation, okay, he believes that the unemployment has to be less. It says, he says that you cannot have economic growth without inflation. So he says if there is inflation, it is good because inflation will create more jobs and therefore there will be less unemployment. So we have to understand in the economy that whenever there is inflation taking place, then are we facing a situation of stagflation? Or are we facing a situation of Phillips curve? Phillips curve will happen, will take place when inflation is high but unemployment is less. Inverse relation. Got it? Whereas stagflation is a situation where inflation is also high and unemployment is also high. Direct relation. Now students, you have to think and decide which is considered as a better. Stagflation or Phillips curve? I'm sure you all agree with Phillips curve, right? Now what happens here is, if you go for data analysis, then you have to look at the last 15, 20 years data of India and try to find out which were those period of time where the country experienced stagflation and which were the situation where country faced Phillips curve. Then we can look at that and relate it with the government policies. We can check what type of which government was in power, what were their taxation policies, what was the Reserve Bank of India policies during Phillips curve and during stagflation. This is how you can in companies can do a research. They can take this data and use this data so that they can predict that if the similar type of measures are operating now, then what would be the probable outcome of these type of measures. It's very useful for basically decision making, like you say, na, certainty. So you have some past data and on that basis you are trying to make some type of probability outcomes of any measures. Let's see further. Yeah, now we move from all these macro variables to a very macroeconomic environment called trade cycle, business cycle. Now we have understood that there is inflation, there is national income, which is a very important macro variable for the economic performance. Trade cycle is a part. Trade cycle is ups and downs in the business. No business, no external environment is going to be smoothly either rising or falling. There will always be upswing and downswing. Here we have the economist J.M. Keynes. J.M. Keynes says that whenever you look at the economic activities, they will either be going up or they will be falling. So the upswing and the downswing in any business activity is considered as a trade cycle. He said trade cycle is a wave-like movement. It is pervasive. Okay. There is always a cumulative process of expansion and contraction. And all trade cycles are self-enforcing. So this is the nature, or you can say these are the features of a trade cycle. Trade cycle kya hai? It is a fluctuation in the level of economic activity. Inflation, national income, prices, stock market performance, profits, incomes, etc. Thank you, students.